Real businesses like Malibu Apothecary rely on Spectrum to keep them connected.
We're a fragrance company, but we also have a lot of technology that we use. Spectrum is really the backbone of any of the business we do here. Having a reliable, fast internet service that can fit my budget is really great. I traded a 9 to 5 for a 5 to 9. It's a lot of work, but I love it.
Spectrum Business Internet starts at $40 a month when bundled. Learn more at spectrum.com/business. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
I'm Jenna Fisher.
And I'm Angela Kinsey.
And together we have the podcast Office Ladies.
Just because we finished rewatching The Office does not mean we're going anywhere.
Every Wednesday, we'll be sharing even more exclusive stories from The Office and our friendship with brand new guests. Plus, you can revisit all the Office Ladies rewatch episodes every Monday with new bonus tidbits before every episode.
So follow and listen to Office Ladies on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
This is an Odyssey original.
This is KDEX In Depth. I'm Rob Arch.
And I'm Chris Seaton, sitting in today for Charles Feldman. We've got a new House Speaker. Yeah, new Speaker of the House. Republicans finally coming together, electing Louisiana's Mike Johnson. We'll go in depth on who he is and why Republicans picked him.
Look at me, Chris. I'm jumping at the bit. I'm ready to get the show. I want to get it going now. Governor Newsom met with a major world leader today. We go in depth into what they talked about. Also, quirky rituals. Most of us do them, maybe without even realizing it. We'll look at whether they are good to keep doing.
Jumping in. Maybe that's one of your quirky rituals.
Yeah, I think that's it.
We start, though, with the selection of the new Speaker of the House, finally. Eric Wasson, Bloomberg's congressional reporter. He's at the Capitol right now. Eric, thanks for taking some time for us today.
Thanks so much for having me.
You know, the Trump backers seem dug in, the moderates as well on the Republican side. This vote really went a lot smoother than the previous three. Why?
I know. It was almost a unanimous, in fact, it was unanimous. There's no one opposing Republican Mike Johnson on the Republican side. I think Mike Johnson, he is, first of all, he's a very nice guy. And I think having no enemies in this town, this fight was very personal. There were a lot of grudges, a lot of history between the members. And they found someone who's sort of a fresh face. He doesn't have that same history. He's very conservative, very similar in policies to Jim Jordan, one of the conservatives who lost the nomination. But he just doesn't have the same sort of personal history due to he's not a combative person like Jordan has been.
But what is this? Does this bode well for the House getting along with President Biden going forward? Because Kevin McCarthy arguably tried to play both sides of the middle, did not succeed. He made too many promises to the far right wing of the caucus. And then he got caught actually working with President Biden on that continuing resolution. And that was the death knell. So with that in mind, are they going to look at Mike Johnson like, don't you make the mistake that Kevin McCarthy did? You do nothing to help the Democrats and the president.
Well, you're asking you exactly the right question. I got a story out today on this. Johnson does have a plan to sort of avert this shutdown that's looming on November 18th when the current funding expires. He says, you know, kick the can down to January 15th or April 15th and get all those regular 12 spending bills done and, you know, work them out with the Senate. But I already started talking to some conservatives here in the House, and they're saying they want their priorities attached to the stopgap. This is the same exact problem that bedeviled McCarthy in September. You know, the idea of attaching a 30% sudden cut to spending to that must-pass bill, that the Democrats in the White House won't accept. This really does raise the specter of a government shutdown.
Eric, does the one person can vote you out rule, the rule that ended the speakership for Kevin McCarthy, does that rule apply to Mike Johnson?
Yeah, the rule is still in place, and I think people came to accept that it's going to be in place. You know, if Mike Johnson turned out to be far too conservative, far too into sort of a shutdown mentality and confrontation, perhaps the moderates would take that up. That's not been changed. I don't expect it to be changed until or whenever Democrats take over the House of Representatives, when they would try to revert it to the way it was under Pelosi, where it can't be brought so easily.
Mike Johnson voted against certifying the 2020 election. He was arguably one of the architects behind the scheme to kind of use the House to overturn the election of President Biden. What does that mean going forward in 2024 if Mike Johnson is still the Speaker of the House? And who knows at this point? Does he not certify an election if Biden wins in 2024?
You know, he's a constitutional lawyer. He made some arguments that Democrats and most people believe are legally spurious. He argued that, you know, crafted that legal brief and was rejected by the courts. But he really didn't, as far as we know, conspire with, you know, any of the mob on January 6th. So I think there's sort of a limit, you know, that remains to be seen. Certainly it's a possibility. But, you know, he was not the vice president. He wouldn't have that you know, sort of pivotal role that Mike Pence potentially had to overturn the election. So I think, you know, he's been dodging questions on this. We've been asking him both yesterday and today. He's dodging it. You know, it remains to be seen, but certainly it won him Trump's loyalty, and that turned out to be pivotal because Trump was able to quash Tom Emmer of Minnesota's candidacy a day ago when he was the nominee over Emmer's vote to certify the election. And then Trump put his weight behind Johnson earlier today.
All right, Eric Watson, thank you so much. Bloomberg's congressional reporter at the Capitol right now.
With us now is Kevin Kosar, senior fellow at the American Enterprise Institute. He's an expert on Congress. Kevin, thank you for taking some time for us today. First of all, why, in your opinion, did Republicans finally settle on very not very well-known Mike Johnson rather than a Tom Emmer or a Jim Jordan?
Well, I think in part it was because he was not particularly well-known. He's known well within the chamber itself. He seems to get along pretty well with others, but he's not a polarizing figure like Mr. Jordan. He's also extraordinarily conservative, which means that the kind of faction of the party, House Freedom Caucus, and those who are close to it, who have shot down Mr. Emmer and Mr. McCarthy, they were happy with him. And I think those factors combined with just general exhaustion. Coming back and doing these votes again and again and again is tiresome. I think they were tiring of the drama.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up because I wonder if Mike Johnson had been put forward, say, a couple of candidates ago, if he would have won then, or did Mike Johnson just win now because Republicans are like, whatever, give us Pol Pot, we'll vote for him, we're done with this. We're, you know, they were getting embarrassed by how long this was taking. Or did Mike Johnson get elected Speaker of the House because he was really the answer to their prayers?
Yeah, I mean, I think the contrast between his candidacy and Emmer's is instructive. I'm sure Republicans were just as tired in the last couple of days as they were today. But nonetheless, Emmer went down in flames, not least because of drawing fire from Mr. Trump, but also because he had taken certain votes in the past that were upsetting to the right part of the Republican conference. And yeah, so he was kind of the right guy at the right time.
Can this vote be seen as a victory for Matt Gaetz?
I think it can. I think it can. You know, you've already mentioned on the program that he was involved with the effort back on January 6th to see if the Biden presidency could be delayed or possibly overturned. He's, you know, Christian conservative Southerner. You look at the issues he's involved in. He's on Judiciary Committee, doing lots of investigations, armed services, military. He kind of fits the profile.
So, at the risk of appearing lazy, I'm going to ask you the question that I asked our last guest and see if we can get your take on it, if it's different. Since he did vote against, you know, certifying the 2020 election, was one of the architects of an idea that that the election of Joe Biden could be overturned. That did not pan out in the courts, of course. But he seemed to have followed on with that idea, agreeing with Donald Trump that the election had been stolen and rigged, etc. Does that mean that if Joe Biden wins in 2024 against, let's say, Donald Trump, and Donald Trump once again cries that it was stolen and rigged, does he block the certification in the House?
I don't think so. I'd bet against it. You know, for one, the Speaker is not empowered on that day to preside over the chamber. It's the Vice President. For another, the Electoral Count Act, the 100-plus-year-old law that kind of governs how the process works, Congress fixed that. They updated the language. They got rid of a lot of the ambiguities in it. And it's going to be a lot harder for somebody to try to read that law in a way that enables them to say, oh, we don't have to count these electoral slates from the states. And, you know, having, since MAGA Nation really kind of failed to make their case in court or anywhere else in a way that was particularly convincing about election theft to the rest of the nation, trying to make that case again is, could be the old, boy who cried wolf sort of problem.
Kevin, I hope I'm not putting you on the spot with this question, but let me ask you, did the Democrats play this vote right, this process? Should they have perhaps pushed harder to help moderate Republicans get a moderate candidate over the line?
Very good question. I wonder if any of them are rethinking their decision to participate in the vote to remove Mr. McCarthy. I would say Mr. McCarthy is more flexible on terms of his policy prescriptions than perhaps the new speaker, but maybe not. Some Democrats said Mr. McCarthy was a bit too flexible, and they, you know, thought he was getting promising them one thing, and then he'd turn around and do another thing. And this guy probably is going to be a lot more clear about what's acceptable and what's not. Hard to say.
You got continuing resolutions still ahead, and very quickly, our final question before we run out of time. If Mike Johnson commits the sin of actually making a deal with President Biden, which is what got Kevin McCarthy ousted, does he get ousted?
Probably. Yeah, unless he has the full blessing of the caucus.
You didn't even have to think about that for very long.
Right. Yeah, no, he can't do anything at the behest of his caucus. I think it's much more likely that we're going to end up with a government shutdown just because the position staked out by the House on the spending bills is going to be very different from what's staked out by the Senate, to say nothing of what Mr. Biden would tolerate.
All right. Thanks so much. Kevin Kosar, senior fellow at the American Enterprise Institute, expert on Congress.
Spectrum Business keeps real businesses like Rise Bakery connected.
As a business owner, my Spectrum services help simplify my day. Everything we do is easier knowing that we've got a reliable connection. And it helps our business just run really smoothly. Even though our techniques are very ancient, we rely just as heavily on technology. Spectrum allows my business to go from surviving to thriving.
Keep your business running smoothly with Spectrum Internet, starting at $40 a month. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
I'm Jenna Fisher.
And I'm Angela Kinsey.
And together we have the podcast Office Ladies.
Just because we finished rewatching The Office does not mean we're going anywhere.
Every Wednesday, we'll be sharing even more exclusive stories from The Office and our friendship with brand new guests. Plus, you can revisit all the Office Ladies rewatch episodes every Monday with new bonus tidbits before every episode.
So follow and listen to Office Ladies on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Coming up a little later in the show, tying your shoes a certain way, or maybe perhaps always wearing your favorite team's jersey on game day, might seem strange to others, but some experts say these little rituals we all have them, might just be a good thing. We'll explain.
And right now, there are multiple reports that the U.S. has been pushing Israel to delay its ground invasion of Gaza as work is being done to free the hostages. U.S. officials also reportedly concerned the ground invasion may not go as Israel hopes. Dan Blakely is a Special Ops Army Ranger veteran and co-author of the book, The 20-Year War, which details the global war on terror. Thanks so much for joining us today.
Of course. Thank you for having me.
So did the U.S. request of Israel to hold off on the ground invasion while they worked to free the hostages, or was that something left unspoken?
I think there's a multitude of reasons why the U.S. has probably, I won't say directly requested, but has urged caution for Israel to have a ground invasion into Gaza. And really, it comes down to the military advantage. You know, there's multiple reasons why you would want to immediately invade, you know, catch a terrorist organization on their heels and, you know, hopefully sweep through. And it seems like an easy thing to do, bring in a large military force, take out a terrorist organization, go home happy to your family and loved ones. But that's not reality. That's not the reality of war. Pushing in a military force into a densely populated area that is Gaza is going to have significant ramifications for the civilians that are present during that that force. And so I think the U.S. is just urging caution to say that there needs to be a strategic initiative, an idea of how you're going to go through and clear through that densely populated area while minimizing civilian casualties.
Dan, there must be an awful lot going on behind the scenes that we don't know about, we can't know about as civilians. From your background, what is likely happening behind the scenes right now that we don't know, that part of the effort to try and get the hostages out?
As far as the hostages, I mean, the negotiating process is very interesting because you have regional actors that are obviously involved that the U.S. is probably having some level of influence in, you know, Qatar and Egypt and obviously Israel and some other local actors are trying to get involved to try and get as many hostages released as possible. Obviously, Hamas is dragging their feet on the process. They're doing it for probably a multitude of reasons, you know, readying their troops, their terrorist fighters, probably trying to dig in because they know that this active assault into Gaza is likely to happen. But the conversations still need to be had to try and get hostages rescued. And there's, you know, the U.S. has released some of their special mission units to go advise and help direct on how to go and rescue the hostages if needed. You know, obviously there's a multitude of contingency plans in place, but it's a lot building to really this pinnacle effort that's going to happen. Either the hostages will be released or Israel will go in and invade, and hopefully at the same time there will be an effort by probably Israeli troops in conjunction with some of their partner forces, including the United States, to go in and rescue as many hostages as possible.
Well, I can't help but wonder, Dan, that you mean much has been made about the Americans asking the Israelis to hold off while they try to get the hostages out. But I think a lot of people probably just wonder, you know, in the big scheme of things, without boots on the ground, with some people, maybe, you know, some undercover people working inside Gaza right now, how in the world can they make any progress? I mean, I'm just not sure how that function would work.
Yeah, it's a lot. You know, the U.S. has unfortunately gone through its own experience in, you know, either being the force that's going in to eradicate terrorism or the force that's going in to take over and remove a power. And I talk about, you know, eradicate a terrorist force going into Afghanistan, removing a local power being in Iraq and removing the Iraqi military.
Dan, very quickly, let me interject here before we run out of time. We said in the intro that some officials in the U.S. are concerned that a ground invasion might not go the way Israel wants it to. Is part of that concern based on the fact that, yeah, we have had this delay to try to work on getting some hostages out, but is that delay going to make a ground invasion for Israel harder?
It's going to be difficult no matter what. I don't think it's going to make it harder. It's just going to make it different.
And what are the concerns that officials have?
Really just maintaining that they follow the laws of armed conflict and the international humanitarian law, really reducing the civilian casualty rate and also making sure that the troops are prepared for that invasion, that they know how to clear the urban environment and occupy when that clearance is complete.
All right, Dan Blakely, thank you so much. Special Ops Army Ranger veteran, also co-author of a book called The 20-Year War. It details the global war on terror.
You're listening to KNX In Depth. Along with Rob Archer, I'm Chris Sedens.
Governor Newsom is in China, had a surprise meeting with China's leader Xi Jinping.
The governor is visiting China on a tour to push for climate cooperation, but could he also be helping to smooth relations, rough relations between the U.S. and China? Clayton Duby, director of USC's U.S.-China Institute, joins us now to talk more about this. Clayton, thank you for taking some time for us today.
Happy to be with you.
Was it really a surprise that Governor Newsom got a chance to meet with Xi in person, sit down and talk?
I suspect that it was always a possibility and that Newsom may have made the request, but it's not the sort of thing that they would necessarily announce in advance, given how sticky the relationship is.
Yeah, tensions are high between the U.S. and China right now. Does this kind of help smooth the way between the two countries, kind of like a backdoor way?
It doesn't hurt. It's not likely to change much in substance. But one of the things that's important here is that the two are talking with each other as opposed to about each other. And the only way we're going to succeed in addressing the many things that divide the United States and China is if we get together and we actually hammer away at some of these hard problems.
Yeah, Clayton, we're at one state in a massive country, but we do have a very large economy, one of the largest in the world. Tell us about the importance of California's relationship with China.
Well, you made an excellent point about the size of the California economy. We're certainly, I think, top seven, in terms of if we were an independent country. But California is also, last year, the number two exporter to China. And the China market is very important for the California economy. And so, for example, California last year, just in terms of goods, exported almost $18 billion worth of items. Now, services is also a California strength. And services have been down a little bit because travel is so far down. And we often forget that included in the services total are services such as education, where Chinese students come to the United States, and where Chinese tourists come to the United States. And California is the number one destination. Because there are so few flights between the United States and China, tourism is much lower than it historically has been. Pre-pandemic, we were looking on an average day of 6,000 Chinese coming to America on an average day. Because of the pandemic, it dropped off entirely, and the slow return of flights has meant that the number of Chinese flowing to the United States is still reduced.
So here we have a governor of a state meeting with the leader of a country. And while Governor Newsom is the first one to tell you, I'm not running for president, technically he's correct, but he certainly does look like he's running for president or some other higher office down the road, and certainly didn't make this trip and meet with the leader of China without the approval of President Biden. So is this a signal that Governor Newsom is stepping onto the world stage as kind of a prelude to some office he's running for that he's not really running for, but he is really running for?
Well, I don't know. We have to wait and see whether or not he ends up as a presidential candidate. But the governor of California is a major world leader because our economy is so big, because of our disproportionate weight in terms of pop culture, because we have been on the cutting edge in science and technology, California matters. And so Governor Newsom's predecessors, Schwarzenegger and Brown, both traveled frequently to China and both forged deals in China. As mayor of San Francisco, Newsom traveled to Shanghai, the sister city, San Francisco's sister city. And so he's been to China. He's been interacting with these officials for quite some time. Whether or not that, helps his political portfolio going forward is anybody's guess. But it's certainly important for California that the governor and the governor forge and improve ties in China, particularly as it, as it addresses climate change. And here we already have received investment from China on that. Los Angeles County is the headquarters for BYD, which is the number one producer of electric vehicles in the world and produces electric buses up in Lancaster. And so we need these ties, both as a market and as a potential source of Chinese investment in these important technologies.
Clayton, was there any chance that human rights was discussed, or would that have been an absolute non-starter to get a meeting with Xi?
Well, I'm sure if Newsom's people, his representatives, had said, we want to come and talk about the situation in Xinjiang, we want to talk about repression in Hong Kong, that this meeting would not have happened. At the same time, I am fairly certain that Governor Newsom brought these subjects up, perhaps behind closed doors with these Chinese leaders, to indicate that these issues do matter to Californians. We are not just an economy, we're a society, and we believe in the dignity of individuals. And so this is an important consideration. But we have to be able to walk and chew gum at the same time. We have to be able to deal with the China that is, as well as trying to encourage China to reconsider some of the policies, some of the repressive policies that it has towards its own people.
All right. Clayton Duby, director of the USC US-China Institute. Thank you.
Do you ever find yourself doing a routine, a small ritual over and over again? Perhaps you wear the same shirt on a certain day, or maybe you're like Rob Archer, always pointing. Maybe you comb your hair a certain way with a certain comb.
Well, it turns out those little rituals, however odd they might seem, might be just good for your mental health. That's sometimes hard to imagine. We're going to find out. Dr. Mo Gelbart, Director of Behavioral Health at Torrance Memorial Medical Center. Thanks for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
So what are some of these odd little rituals? Because, you know, when I think off the bat, I can't think of anything I do, but I'm sure I do. So give us some examples.
Well, things like, we actually all probably grew up with some of them. Things like Tuesday night is spaghetti night or something, or let's go visit grandma every Sunday, you know, at her home, or let's go to the library on Thursday nights, or let's have such and such dinner, you know, the family dinners two or three times a week or any particular night. So those are all the kind of rituals we work actually recommend quite strongly to people to actually raise their well-being and mental health.
So it sounds like they could be a ritual. You talk about going to somebody's place on a certain night or a certain day, that all the way down to something maybe as trivial as this, you know, using a certain comb. Or I know when I'm walking towards my car, when I'm leaving my condo to go to work, I walk down some stairs and I always glance up at the same step basically every day just before I get into the parking garage. A little ritual like that. So big things to small things.
Correct. You know, rituals provide a certain degree of certainty and a certain degree of predictability. And they're so important in a world where, you know, much of what we have is not in our control and much of what we have feels chaotic. So whatever it is we can grab on that gives us a sense of mastery actually reduces anxiety, reduces stress, and in many ways improves our well-being. And just one last thing, you know, they may seem to someone else as trivial or ridiculous, but to that person who decides to plan that in their life, they're really important.
But what about when this odd little ritual gets out of control? I'm talking about people who have that condition where they have to do something multiple times, like turn the light on and off six times, and they cannot function if they don't do that. Is that when it gets out of control, or is that still maybe good for them to do?
No, you're describing something what we call obsessive compulsive disorder, which is very different from a ritual. That is, they're compelled in their mind to continue to do something over and over. And when it interferes with their ability to function day to day, in other words, if you want to get to work, but you have to keep going back and checking the garage, and then you head off to work and you come back and forth and back and forth, that's really more of an obsessive compulsive disorder than it is a ritual.
So I take it then when it comes to just strictly rituals, there's nothing detrimental, nothing dangerous about rituals then?
Well, you know, I do work with parents, and one of the things I talk about is in lectures is about setting rituals, but I make sure that we're not talking about things like satanic rituals. But I mean, that's only joking. Of course, there's nothing dangerous about the kind of rituals we're describing here.
Yeah, let's get into satanic rituals. Let's go ahead and talk about that.
That'll be fun.
It relieves my anxiety, sir. you know, someone told me once that when they put on their shoes, they put on sock, shoe. And I thought, that's crazy. So the fact that I put on sock, shoe, but it's always left one first, right one second. I mean, always. Mm-hmm. And I noticed that I never put right one on first, left one. Does that count as one of those little odd little rituals you can do that kind of helps calm your anxiety? Does that give me a sense of control over my surroundings?
Yes. And again, I would not call it odd. I think it's really important. That's something that provides a sense, as I said, of mastery, of control for you. And you always know the outcome. It's something you can predict pretty easily. When you are doing it in any different order, you may feel like something's not working right, not exactly correct, and you begin to feel a little anxiety. Now, you're not going to develop any great amount of anxiety about putting your shoes on in a different order, but it's just a matter of just knowing that, as I said, the word mastery, that you have some ability to put some controls in your life, and there are things that you learn that you can depend on and feel like you can always, whenever you get there, you know what it's going to turn out like.
Yeah, there was a famous scene from All in the Family where Meathead was just driving Archie crazy because he was putting on left sock, left shoe, right sock, right shoe.
Yeah, that's just insane. I'm sorry.
It was crazy. People
need to be locked up.
Dr. Gelbart, maybe before we wrap things up, is there one, could you think of one particular quirk that you've heard about that is really out of the ordinary?
Nothing really comes to mind, only because as I thought about our discussion today, I was thinking really of the benefit of this ritualistic behavior.
Well, what's an odd ritual that you have?
Yeah.
I wouldn't call it odd. You know, I get up at a certain time every morning because I pack my gym bag the night before, because I know then that way I'll get up and be able to, at a certain time and get to the gym and so on. So I wouldn't call that, I don't call most rituals as odd. I think if it doesn't, there's two criteria. One, on the negative side, if it does not negatively impact your day-to-day activity, then I don't believe it, then it's helpful rather than odd. And again, the flip side of that, if it assists in your day-to-day, in your activities of living, then it's helpful. You know, research, just to throw out one other quick thing, research shows, for example, that families that have the ritual of sitting down and eating dinner one or two times a week together, their teenage children have less statistically less not opportunity but statistically less examples of drug use and smoking and so on. So just the ritual of being together as a family provides a certain comfort and strength.
All right. Well, thanks so much, Dr. Mo Gelbart. One of my rituals is I'm always ending the show. thanks for joining us. Director of Behavioral Health at Torrance Memorial Medical Center. That's going to do it for KNX In Depth today. We'll do it again tomorrow at 1 p.m.
Spectrum Business keeps real businesses like Rise Bakery connected.
As a business owner, my Spectrum services help simplify my day. Everything we do is easier knowing that we've got a reliable connection. And it helps our business just run really smoothly. Even though our techniques are very ancient, we rely just as heavily on technology. Spectrum allows my business to go from surviving to thriving.
Keep your business running smoothly with Spectrum Internet, starting at $40 a month. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
I'm Jenna Fisher.
And I'm Angela Kinsey.
And together we have the podcast Office Ladies.
Just because we finished rewatching The Office does not mean we're going anywhere.
Every Wednesday, we'll be sharing even more exclusive stories from The Office and our friendship with brand new guests. Plus, you can revisit all the Office Ladies rewatch episodes every Monday with new bonus tidbits before every episode.
So follow and listen to Office Ladies on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Do you ever find yourself doing a routine, small ritual, over and over again? Perhaps you wear the same shirt on a certain day, or maybe you're like Rob Archer, always pointing. Maybe you comb your hair a certain way with a certain comb.
Well, it turns out those little rituals, however odd they might seem, might be just good for your mental health. That's sometimes hard to imagine. We're going to find out. Dr. Mo Gelbart, Director of Behavioral Health at Torrance Memorial Medical Center. Thanks for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
So what are some of these odd little rituals? Because, when I think off the bat, I can't think of anything I do, but I'm sure I do. So
give us
some examples.
Well, things like, we actually all probably grew up with some of them. Things like Tuesday night is spaghetti night or something, or let's go visit grandma every Sunday, at her home, or let's go to the library on Thursday nights, or let's have such and such dinner, family dinners two or three times a week or any particular night. So those are all the kind of rituals we work actually recommend quite strongly to people to actually raise their well-being and mental health.
So it sounds like they could be a ritual. You talk about going to somebody's place on a certain night or a certain day. That all the way down to something maybe as trivial as this, you know, using a certain comb. Or I know when I'm walking towards my car, when I'm leaving my condo to go to work, I walk down some stairs and I always glance up at the same step basically every day just before I get into the parking garage. A little ritual like that. So big things to small things.
Correct. Now, rituals provide a certain degree of certainty and a certain degree of predictability, and they're so important in a world where, you know, much of what we have is not in our control and much of what we have feels chaotic. So whatever it is we can grab on that gives us a sense of mastery actually reduces anxiety, reduces stress, and in many ways improves our well-being. And just one last thing, you know, they may seem to someone else as trivial or ridiculous, but to that person who decides to plan that in their life, they're really important.
But what about when this odd little ritual gets out of control? I'm talking about people who have that condition where they have to do something multiple times, like turn the light on and off 6 times, and they cannot function if they don't do that. Is that when it gets out of control, or is that still maybe good for them to do?
No, you're describing something what we call obsessive compulsive disorder, which is very different from a ritual. That is, they're compelled in their mind to continue to do something over and over. And when it interferes with their ability to function day to day, in other words, if you want to get to work, but you have to keep going back and checking the garage, and then you head off to work and you come back and forth and back and forth, that's really more of an obsessive compulsive disorder than it is a ritual.
So I take it then when it comes to just strictly rituals, there's nothing detrimental, nothing dangerous about rituals then?
Well, you know, I do work with parents, and one of the things I talk about is in lectures is about setting rituals, but I make sure that we're not talking about things like satanic rituals. But I mean, that's only joking. Of course, there's nothing dangerous about the kind of rituals we're describing here.
Yeah, let's get into satanic rituals. Let's go ahead and talk about that.
That'll be fun.
It relieves my anxiety, sir. You know, someone told me once that when they put on their shoes, they put on sock, shoe, sock, shoe. And I thought, that's crazy. So the fact that I put on sock, sock, shoe, shoe, but it's always left one first, right one second. I mean, always. Mm-hmm. And I noticed that I never put right one on first, left one. Does that count as one of those little odd little rituals you can do that kind of helps calm your anxiety? Does that give me a sense of control over my surroundings?
Yes. And again, I would not call it odd. I think it's really important. That's something that provides a sense, as I said, of mastery, of control for you. And you always know the outcome. It's something you can predict pretty easily. When you are doing it in any different order, you may feel like something's not working right, not exactly correct, and you begin to feel a little anxiety. Now, you're not going to develop any great amount of anxiety about putting your shoes on in a different order, but it's just a matter of just knowing that, as I said, the word mastery, that you have some ability to put some controls in your life, and there are things that you learn that you can depend on and feel like you can always, whenever you get there, you know what it's going to turn out like.
Yeah, there was a famous scene from All in the Family where Meathead was just driving Archie crazy because he was putting on left sock, left shoe, right sock, right shoe.
Yeah, that's just insane. I'm sorry.
It was crazy. People
need to be locked up.
Dr. Gelbart, maybe before we wrap things up, is there one, could you think of one particular quirk that you've heard about that is really out of the ordinary?
Nothing really comes to mind, only because as I thought about our discussion today, I was thinking really of the benefit of this ritualistic behavior.
Well, what's an odd ritual that you have?
Yeah.
I wouldn't call it odd. You know, I get up at a certain time every morning because I pack my gym bag the night before, because I know then that way I'll get up and be able to, you know, at a certain time and get to the gym and so on. So I wouldn't call that, you know, I don't call most rituals as odd. I think if it doesn't, there's two criteria. One, on the negative side, if it does not negatively impact your day-to-day activity, then I don't believe it, then it's helpful rather than odd. And again, the flip side of that, if it assists in your day-to-day, in your activities of living, then it's helpful. You know, research, just to throw out one other quick thing. You know, research shows, for example, that families that have the ritual of sitting down and eating dinner one or two times a week together, their teenage children have less, statistically less, not opportunity, but statistically less examples of drug use and smoking and so on. So just the ritual of being together as a family provides a certain comfort and strength.
All right. Well, thank you so much, Dr. Mo Gelbart. One of my rituals is I'm always ending the show. thanks for joining us. Director of Behavioral Health at Torrance Memorial Medical Center. That's going to do it for KNX In Depth today. We'll do it again tomorrow at 1 p.m.
Real businesses like Malibu Apothecary rely on Spectrum to keep them connected.
We're a fragrance company, but we also have a lot of technology that we use. Spectrum is really the backbone of any of the business we do here. Having a reliable, fast internet service that can fit my budget is really great. I traded a 9-to-5 for a 5-to-9. It's a lot of work, but I love it.
Spectrum Business Internet starts at $40 a month when bundled. Learn more at spectrum.com/business. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
I'm Jenna Fisher.
And I'm Angela Kinsey.
And together, we have the podcast Office Ladies.
Just because we finished rewatching The Office does not mean we're going anywhere.
Every Wednesday, we'll be sharing even more exclusive stories from The Office and our friendship with brand new guests. Plus, you can revisit all the Office Ladies rewatch episodes every Monday with new bonus tidbits before every episode.
So follow and listen to Office Ladies on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.